Here we are in the Congressional Corner with Mondaire Jones. He is the new Democratic representative-elect of New York's 17th District. We had a conversation the other day. So, Mondaire, first of all, I have a personal question. I love your name. How did your parents come on to Mondaire?
It was my aunt and my uncle who brought the idea to my mother. They had seen the name. It is a French name. Though I myself am not French, and very loosely translated means my heir.
Interesting. I promised at the end of the last conversation that I was going to ask you about the district. And you said you like to talk about the district. Tell us about what makes it, and you said it was the best in the country. Tell us what's so unique about it and what you want us to know about the 17th District. And frankly, for a lot of our listeners, because we go for a long way, parts of seven states, where is it?
My district, New York's 17th Congressional District, includes all of Rockland County, which is where I was born and raised, and parts of Westchester County. In fact, most of the district includes those Westchester portions. And I describe it as a tale of two cities. There is great affluence, but as the New York Times said in its endorsement of my campaign back in June, there are pockets of deep poverty like where I grew up in the working class village of Spring Valley. It is beautiful. There are so many parks, and it's diverse, though not as diverse as parts of New York City. Still diverse, both racially, ethnically, in terms of religion, and it is a place where people feel very strongly a sense of community. People know each other. They like living here. They're not trying to leave. Unfortunately, it's got to be so expensive that we've got to do something to make it affordable for more people to move to. There are folks right now my age who, despite having college degrees, have to live at home with their parents. That's the way they're able to live in this district, because they can't afford to live independently. And so we've got some real challenges with respect to cost of living that I want to tackle as a member of Congress.
So let me ask you this. You are, of course, replacing the retiring Nita Lowey, who we used to interview on this very program. So is there anything in the district that it's pressing in a way that doesn't occur in other districts, or is it all pretty much the same all around?
You know, I think the challenges that we face in my district, in Westchester and Rockland counties, are challenges that are faced by many districts throughout New York State in particular. This is an extremely expensive place to live. And unfortunately, we have seen wages remain stagnant when you adjust for inflation over the past several decades. As, for example, the cost of housing has increased, as the cost of a higher education has skyrocketed. You know, when I look at the fact that in the early 90s, folks were graduating four-year institutions with an average debt of around $9,000, and how as of around 2017, it was more like $37,000. We've got to take a serious look at that. You know, this is not as easy to pay off your college debt as it was even a couple of decades ago. And of course, affordable housing, or the absence thereof, is a really pressing concern in many parts of this district. So these challenges. And I'll also add the fact that when Donald Trump capped the SALT deduction, the state and local tax deduction, at $10,000, it crushed middle-class families in my district. We pay the highest property taxes in the entire nation. Westchester's number one by county, and Rockland is number two. And so I'm going to be fighting to lift that $10,000 cap and to restore that SALT deduction in the way that people throughout New York State need it, and in California and Connecticut, New Jersey, other highly taxed states.
No, you mentioned, Mondaire Jones, you mentioned higher education. Now, I taught at New Paltz, your neighbor there, for over 40 years. My question, and I used to ask my classes, now these are kids at the state university now. We're not talking about, you know, high ticket places. And I used to ask them, how many of you had to take out a loan in order to come here? And guess what? Can you answer the question? Every single one of them. I bet you were going to say. Know, I bet you were going to say that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, you know, I have my own student debt from law school, but I'm in a much better situation than folks who had to take out loans just to get a college degree, which we know is necessary for the vast majority of good paying jobs, not all, but the vast majority of good paying jobs in our economy. And so in that environment, we have to look at structural changes that are going to materially improve the lives of this younger generation. It used to be that a college education was a ticket to the American dream. Unfortunately, that is not true today. Not only do you oftentimes need more than that, but you can't even afford it because you're crushed with debt right after you graduate. And I was proud to stand with Chuck Schumer, Richie, and incoming members of Congress, Richie Torres and Jamal Bowman a few days ago to talk about this issue and the call on future President Biden to use his executive authority to cancel up to $50,000 in student debt that's federally owned.
How can you do that? You just say, poof, it's gone. That $50,000, I'm not trying to be a wise guy here, but doesn't he need law to do that?
Yeah, so he has the statutory ability to do that. And I know is looking into doing independent research on that subject, according to Senator Schumer, who's had conversations with him about this.
Your campaign made a big deal out of restoring American democracy. That's in quotes. So what do we need to do to clean up after Trump?
So in addition to using independent redistricting commissions to draw congressional districts, so that people running for Congress have to be responsive to the people who elected them rather than just Democrats or just Republicans. We have to make Election Day a national holiday. We have to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which would effectively reauthorize the Voting Rights Act that was gutted in John Roberts' Shelby decision in 2013 by the Supreme Court. It would basically update the Voting Rights Act, and hopefully that would be that would survive the kind of scrutiny that this 6-3 conservative majority on the Supreme Court would apply to it. We have got to do automatic voter registration, and H.R. 1, the For the People Act, would do precisely that. It would enfranchise an additional 50 million people nationally. It should not be that people's right to vote is being suppressed in this country, unfortunately, by Republican state legislatures and statewide elected officials. They fought so hard and for so long in New York State to prevent these reforms that we saw. And they did that because they know that when everyone is allowed to vote, Democrats tend to win. The party of working people tends to be successful. It's why we now have a supermajority in the state Senate, despite all the millions of dollars that were invested in this race against certain state Senate candidates who had voted for some legislation like the democracy reforms I just described.
As we speak today, the Supreme Court, not surprisingly, has this, and you're a Harvard Law graduate, so you can explain it to all of us, has this case coming brought by Texas against states which certified Biden as the winner. Are you satisfied? I mean, you mentioned 6-3 on the Supreme Court, which it is, although I have to say Roberts has been relatively behaving himself, I would think. Now, my question to you is, do you think this is all lost now because of this court? Or do you think we can get through this?
I think we can get through it, and I think we will get through it if we meet the moment. What I have been talking about is how over the past few decades, the kinds of justices that have been appointed to the Supreme Court have, for the most part, been justices that are hyper-partisan and that are hostile to democracy itself. And that, unfortunately, does include Chief Justice John Roberts, who was in the majority in that Shelby decision in 2013
right,
that struck down the heart of the Voting Rights Act. Justice Roberts gets a lot of praise for being now the moderate on that court. But if you look at his jurisprudence with respect to voting rights, it is god-awful. And that has been the play for many decades now by that party, that he used to be very active in before he was elevated to the bench. And so I support court expansion as a way to rebalance
really
court and unrig our democracy. Yeah, this isn't about partisanship, by the way. You know, Justice David Souter and Justice John Paul Stevens, they were Republicans, but they ruled on cases with great independence, and they were fantastic jurists. So this isn't about Democratic wins and Republican losses. This is about getting people who are going to be independent thinkers and adherents to precedent on the court, not activist Fox News style judges who are going to be hostile to healthcare expansion for the sake of entrenching Republican power. And so I think that we have to be looking very seriously at that. And as a member of the House of Representatives, I will have some say in that with respect to legislation to expand the courts, not just at that level, but in the lower courts as well. We've seen dockets become very busy, and there are not enough judges in the lower courts.
Congressman Mondaire Jones, I'm having a great time talking to you, but we're out of time for this segment. But if everybody tunes in tomorrow, I'll start where we stopped, okay?
All right.